I'll pour a glass of Chaz into a tub of Bob. I'll smoke a pack of Jazz while I'm flat on my back. I'll eat a dish of Chris out of a bowl of Joel on a saucer of tea. Or would you rather have...
This is the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. A U.S. general says the bombing of one of Shia's most sacred mosques this morning was an inside job. 15 security officers guarding the site have been arrested. The demolition of two minarets at the Golden Dome in Samarra has threatened to make sectarian violence in Iraq even more explosive, as it did last year when the mosque was first targeted. Curfews have been called, and even firebrand Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr is calling for calm, despite pleas from clerics not to retaliate. An important Sunni mosque in Baghdad was bombed just minutes before the curfew was put into effect. Two U.S. soldiers were killed in Baghdad yesterday. Two were wounded. A Marine was killed in combat in the Anbar province. Fierce fighting in Gaza this morning claimed the lives of at least another 9 Palestinians. 60 have died in the past 4 days. Gunmen fired at a peace demonstration this morning, killing one. Regional analysts fear the territories are teetering on the brink of all-out civil war. The UN announced it will immediately trim its humanitarian aid assistance in Gaza following the death of two of its workers there today and the wounding of two others. The UN will shrink its immediate assistance in the area to food supplies and medical aid. In Jerusalem, former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak has been elected head of the Labor Party. Shimon Peres is expected today to be elected as president of Israel. Barak, Peres, and other leading politicians have called for the resignation of Israel's current Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. On Capitol Hill, the House today debates legislation aimed at keeping guns out of the hands of the mentally ill. Widely supported after the Virginia Tech massacre, the bill was written with the assistance of the National Rifle Association. For only the second time in his presidency, President Bush appeared at the Senate's weekly closed-door luncheon yesterday. The visit was an attempt to convince skeptical conservative Republicans to support the controversial immigration bill. No senator reported a change of heart. In Portland, Oregon, federal agents raided a Del Monte fruit and vegetable processing plant yesterday and arrested 165 workers said to be illegal immigrants. Three other plant officials were charged with identity theft and forging fake Social Security documents. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
It's not hard to find people in need. They're everywhere. And there's more than one kind of disaster that affects people's lives. There's AIDS and the millions of orphans the disease has left behind. There are teeming refugee camps, the result of war and persecution. Mary Knoll has been reaching out to the world's needy for nearly a century. Mary Knoll is there right now, in 40 countries around the world. And with your help, Mary Knoll will be there tomorrow. Call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. Or, for more information, go to www.mygiftcounts.org. One world, one mission, Mary Knoll.
A House panel yesterday heard that some 75,000 Marines and their families at Camp Lejeune were exposed to tap water with 40 times the permitted toxins before the water system at the North Carolina base was renovated. The water supply was poisoned for 30 years by chemicals used as solvents in dry cleaning. Cockroaches have both memory and the ability to learn, capacity scientists up to now have only proved possible in humans and dogs. Those are the findings of Japanese scientists. Poachers have shot the last two white rhinos in the country of Zambia. One was killed, the other badly injured. The rare white beasts lived in a national park. Astronauts at the International Space Station today will continue their work replacing solar panels. The FTC is challenging the merger of grocery store chains Whole Foods and Wild Oats. The federal panel argues the merger would reduce competition in the niche market and raise consumer prices. The International Energy Agency predicts world oil demand will increase 2% this year to 1.7 million barrels a day. The agency's June report for the fourth month in a row calls on OPEC to increase production to lower prices. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.16 a barrel. You can find more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn Conversation Radio into Conservation Radio. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're building the American dream every day. B1 Louder by ringing 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. Now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, welcome aboard, everybody. It's Wednesday. How you doing? John Fox here in Sydney, Australia, coming to you via the Head On Radio Network. As per usual, glad to have you aboard today. It's we're going to continue with just what's been an extremely musical week because we have a Billy Shears music segment coming up in not too far. And this is going to be great. You're going to love this. You've been hearing the promos all week, the snap, crackle, pop thing, and just hold on. Your curiosity will be satisfied. Trust me. It's gonna be a good show. Now, speaking of rock and roll and other things, is it possible that rock and roll could power your house? Well, not exactly, but Gail sent this to me shortly before the show via Stumble. This is really, really cool. Now, those of you that are musicians out there, you probably know what a piezo pickup is or a piezo driver. They're finding a very, very interesting new use for these little devices. Now, a piezoelectric pickup or sensor or whatever, it's basically... It's a transducer of sorts, and a transducer is something that transfer that changes energy in one form to another. A microphone is a transducer. It takes sound energy and via a voice coil or some other device turns it into an electrical impulse. Well, piezos do the same thing. They're used as pickups in electric guitars. They're used as sensors for doors and things like that. Well, they found a really interesting new use for them, and from a wonderful website, if you've never been there, inhabitat.com, they've got a thing here, and they say, could rock and roll power your house? Well, not quite. However, Good old-fashioned sound just might do the trick, thanks to the work by University of Utah physicist Orest Simcoe and his students, who have developed a way to turn excess heat into sound and electricity. If it sounds too good to be true, well, then you might be surprised to hear that it actually works. It works via a very simple and well-known process. If you take a source of heat and apply it to an enclosed area, the air inside will expand, increasing the pressure inside. The pressurized air will then move through a filter or opening in one side, producing a simple, clear sound as a standard frequency. That's the key to the system. The more focused and directed the frequency is, the easier it is to extract energy from it, which explains why rock and roll wouldn't power your home, though it made a nice intro for this piece. The sound waves then pass through piezoelectric devices, which transform the sound into electricity when squeezed by sound. And, I mean, this is technology that's been around for ages. And when I read this piece, my brain kind of went, duh. Well, of course. And they, it says, can this technology be used to actually power your home? At this point, it's difficult to say, but it does have some practical uses. Take, for instance, your laptop, desktop, or television screen. It could be possible to install these devices to them and recuperate some of the heat lost back into electricity, which can be fed back into your battery. Here's hoping that that the doctor and his students, Bonnie McLaughlin, Nick Webb, Brenna Gilman, Ivan Rodriguez, Mira Flitcroft, can turn this very interesting technology into a usable product. And there's some comments in the comment thread that are kind of interesting. One person asked, I wonder if this could apply to electric vehicle batteries to extend the travel distance on a single charge. Take the heat off the batteries and turn it back into electricity. I mean, we're talking, this is cheap technology. This is really, really cheap technology. You can go and buy piezoelectric transducers at Radio Shack for about $2.50. They're not expensive. And so, this is innovation. This is the kind of stuff that I love to hear about. I just absolutely love this stuff. What about installing them, say, in the flue of a fireplace? Translate the heat going up the flue through a piezo system into electricity inside the house. I think it's just fantastic. Absolutely awesome. It's this is ingenuity. I'll be very, very, very curious to see what this might develop into over the coming years. This is good stuff. And so, anyway, there you have it. I thought that was a fantastic thing. And we got some other stuff to get into a little bit later. I have a crazy story about a guy using biofuel who's being completely screwed by the tax man. But that's a completely different thing. So, we will get there. Now, a reminder to everybody, starting next Monday, not only do we have Peter Godbold's show starting up after Bob Kincaid, but Joe Vecchio and I are going to do a little bit of a time swap. We're going to switch slots. Kind of works out logistically for both of us. It'll give Joe a little bit more of a chance to get home from work and get himself prepped up instead of just running in the house and after doing an all-nighter. And I know how those all-nighters go, so mark that in your calendars. Anyway, folks, we're going to take our first break, and when we come back, it's Shears Music Time, and I love Shears Music Days. I know you do, so stick around. This is a really great one. Part 1 of 2. and your questions will be answered. Who wrote Snap, Crackle, and Pop, and who played it? So you're listening to Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network, and we will be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Hey, kids. There are some questions about what's this new gay conversation radio show coming in June on the Head On Radio Network. Well, the details are safely locked away in my closet, located on a dirt road in the rural South. So the next time you're traveling on an interstate highway, staring out into the red state abyss, just smile and think to yourself, honey, we're everywhere.
Baby, I got your number. Oh, and I know that you got mine.
Hi, I'm Peter Godbold, and welcome to Strictly Confidential. The show premieres June the 18th at 9 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network.
You can call me, baby. You can call me anytime. You got to call me.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Brian Jones was the founding member, lead and rhythm guitarist, and backup singer for the Rolling Stones. And yes, the Rolling Stones was originally his band. Jones was known for his multi-instrumental skills, fashion sense, and his sexual excesses. His shocking death in July 1969 made him a member of the famous 27 Club. He joined Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, and Kurt Cobain. Now there's a heavenly band for you. But for now, let's take a look at Jones before he became a member of the 27 Club. many people are aware that Brian Jones and John Lennon were exceptionally good friends. In this clip, John's personal assistant, Frederick Seaman, recalls his famous employer's thoughts on the flamboyant stone.
John talked about Brian Jones occasionally. I remember once we were listening to a jukebox in a bar in Bermuda, and they had some Beatles singles, including the one that had the name, look up the number, or something like that, an obscure B-side. And he spoke about Brian Jones playing the clarinet solo on that song, and how he and Brian really got on very well as musicians. Well, Brian Jones had a very eclectic musical taste. He shared a love for the blues, Elmore James and people like that, that John also liked. Psychologically, I think they got along because Brian was as tortured as John, maybe even more tortured. So they really had a kind of a kinship there. They both had very traumatic childhoods, and I think that they bonded on some level more so than John did with any of the other Stones.
Snap. What a happy sound. Snap is the happiest sound I've found. You may clap, rap, clap, clap, but snap makes the world go round. Snap, crackle, Rice Krispies.
Brian Jones was not known for writing original songs for the Rolling Stones. He was very unsure and insecure of himself as a composer. There is much speculation that he co-wrote and proposed songs for the group. There is one song, however, that is credited to Jones. It's a 30-second 1963 Rice Krispies jingle, which the Stones performed incognito.
Pop makes the world go round. Snap, crackle, pop, Rice Krispies.
It's rather ironic that the founder and driving force behind the early days of the Rolling Stones found himself on the outside. Here's Jeffrey Giuliano, biographer and popular music authority, on Brian's release from the band.
As 65 wore on, the bad blood between Brian and these two only escalated. Jones once related an incident whereby Jagger allegedly threatened him subtly with the lyrics of the Stones' hit, The Last Time. For their part, the group saw the ambitious Brian as merely paranoid. All of that came to an abrupt halt, however, in May of 1967, when Brian's flat was raided by the drug squad of Scotland Yard. Eventually, his various so-called addictions resulted in him being heartlessly ousted from the Stones in the sultry summer of 1969.
I think the early Stones created some of their best. Perhaps Brian Jones has something to do with that. Here's an example of one of their very best, Under My Thumb.
Around. sugar under my thumb. She's the sweetest pet in the world.
When on May 21, 1968, Brian was again arrested for drug possession, both the media and the public were immediately ready to assume he was guilty. His generally hard-nosed father, however, stood behind him.
He swore to me that he was innocent of it, and he hoped that I would always believe him. I promised him on that occasion that I believed him, and nothing had ever or will ever change my mind.
Join us next week when we take a look at this famous artist's death. At age 27, it's one of rock and roll's great mysteries. This is Billy Shears.
All right.
Thanks for leaning in here.
Sorry, I stepped on his tagger line. Thank you very much, Billy. That was awesome. Can't wait for part two on Friday. We got two of them. And we're going to go straight to the phones because my really good friend, Fire Ant, also known as Lori, is on the line all the way from Queensland. How you going, mate?
Great, mate. Great. Do you see the origin, mate?
No, I missed the origin, but I did catch that the Queensland flag will be flying over the Opera House or over the Harbour Bridge for yet another year. I'm going to have to look at that thing on television all the time again. Maybe next year we'll be able to get the New South Wales flag back up on top of the bridge.
Well, yeah, it'll New South Wales. They should have better players than that, the amount of players down there. But I guess it's the coach. He'd be blaming it on the coach, but that's not the reason why I'm bringing in tonight anyway. So I'm just wanted to talk to you about how the union up here at the university, how conditions have gotten really bad up here at the university since they've gotten rid of the union up here.
Right. Now explain to our Northern Hemisphere unions listeners what the student union is.
Well, we have a student union. It's mainly to protect the interests of the students, like to protect like from bullying or harassment, to more or less be a check and balance to see how the universities treat students. Students can like go to the union if they if a lecturer has deliberately failed them, like through favoritism, or just a wide variety of services. They provide counselling, legal aid. They reduce the prices of books, and they campaign for student rights. They help students find accommodation. It's really great. That's only a few things that I can think of the top of my head. What they've done
right
in the past. And what's happened here is we've had a Prime Minister who's decided he wanted to destroy all the unions, and he's really done a good job at destroying the union at this university. What he did is for years, to be a member of the student union has not been voluntary. So what he firstly did is he passed a law saying that students can no longer claim any university expenses on tax, including union fees. And then he passed a law saying that being a member of the union is voluntary. So students who are struggling for money don't join the union. Therefore, union funds go down and the union's no longer strong anymore, hardly even exists.
Right. There's been a fair amount of activity at Sydney Uni in the city over this issue. And as far as I understand, the student union fees weren't very dear at all.
Yeah.
But however, it was the combined amount of all the students chipping in that made the system be able to work.
Yeah.
And it was and like you said, it was a way of check and balance for the students with the university itself, and they also supplied other other ongoing services as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Mike, I can't think of them all at the top of my head. I don't have the brochure with me, but
right,
the amount of, it's tremendous what they do, what they subsidize. They help in also help in sporting activities, social events. They reduce the price of photocopying. They create there's common rooms where students can go to where they can study. It's all paid for by the union. And
right,
they have job search agencies run by the union. At some universities, they have doctors, so they students can get free medical care, or their psychologists they can see. It's brilliant what they've been able to do in the past.
And this is just one thing in many that Howard's done to kind of marginalize non-full paying students. I mean, the whole thing about making unlimited enrollments for full paying students, and that ends up lessening the guarantees for subsidized students. And it's this idea, you can have an education if you can afford to pay for it.
Yes. Well, he's been attacking the tertiary education system in Australia. It's as if he wants to dumb the Australian people. He's really attacked people that want tertiary education through the taxation system, by increasing fees, by making living standards for students so unbearable with inflation and trying to find accommodation. So what I've seen in the last 6 months at my university is ever since they've gotten rid of the union is there's been an increase in victimization of students, increase of bullying from staff and academics. We've seen a lot of services close down. The union used to own a cafeteria, and it's been taken over by private people, and it's one of the dearest cafeterias in my city. It rivals the airport for expensive food.
You're kidding.
And quality. I'm not kidding. And what I really, yesterday, I'm in the middle of exams at the moment, and I haven't been sleeping much. But I went to buy a chocolate bar, and this chocolate bar had a bit of mold, and it didn't taste too good. And I had a look at it, and it had a bit of mold on it. And I think I might shut this little cafeteria down when I get the chance. Go to the fair trading office, because they're no longer controlled by the union, and the prices are going up, the surfaces have gone down, the quality of food's gone down, and they're just trying to profiteer rather than provide a service. And they're not
My producers told me that I should actually define what dear means. It means expensive.
Expensive.
For those in the Northern Hemisphere. But this is just another sign of this very much, player pays mentality that Howard has, and and anything with union attached to it, just even the term, he wants to destroy.
Yes.
I mean, we know this very well with what's happened, with labor relations and everything else. And he would just love to have a dumbed down population. You should check out in the Sydney Morning Herald. There's an opinion piece about the decline of democracy in Australia, and they talk about, because we've been having these discussions. There's been a lot of pieces about things happening in the UK and the United States, you know, we're reliving, you know, the 10 steps towards fascism and that kind of thing. And they talk about this dumbing down of the public and the marginalizing of outspoken voices and things in Australian society, and how this is actually happening here as well, that, you know, and Howard's massive attacks on labor over this election, where they're just using this absolute fear campaign that no one's allowed to run this government and we control the economy nonsense. You know, it's this very, you know, kind of it's bordering on thick as far as I'm concerned. And I was very surprised to see such a piece in the Sydney Morning Herald, of all places.
Yes, like I don't understand what economy is John Howard trying to defend. He's destroyed it.
He's made it really good for a select few in an extremely, you know, short period of time. And I don't know if you caught former Prime Minister Keating on Late Line last week, where he's saying, look, the changes that I made, you know, whatever it was, you know, 15 years ago, where he floated the Australian dollar, basically put up, set up a system in which unless you blew the budget, you could not screw the Australian economy. That the treasurer is taking a whole lot of credit for something that he really can't screw up, even if he tried.
Yes. But, you know, with Howard and, like, with this right-wing liberal government, you've got to go back to the 80s, too, where Reaganism began to start in America, and we had a Labor Party that followed that Reaganism, and John Howard's just picked up where the Reagan-style Labor Party left off, unfortunately. And like, I'm a unionist, and I'll vote for the Labor Party over the right-wing Liberal Party any day of the week, but if this Labor Party is going to act like a right-wing party, I'm simply not going to vote for them, or vote for the Greens, or an independent. So, but
it's interesting, and I say that, you know, with a whole lot of kind of, you know, trembling in my voice, but it's an interesting time in Australian politics at the moment. I've been watching Question Time fairly regularly in Parliament, and I swear the arrogance that comes out of Howard and Costello both. Costello, I think, has just got to be the biggest playground bully I've ever seen. His tirades are absolutely atrocious. I mean, he's really embarrassing. I'd be embarrassed of this guy, but it just shows the mentality of that side of the government here, that this just absolute, you know, just kind of, you know, narky tone of voice is accepted. You know, it's really scary.
Well, I think he'll make a very good opposition leader, don't you? Peter Costello?
Oh, I reckon... I reckon he will, but as far as all the opinion polls go, no one wants him to take Howard's place. You know, as Holy Moses just said, yeah, Australians call a wanker, and he is a wanker of the tallest order. You know, his whole thing that like, you know, I am the economy guy, and all he has to do is balance the numbers, and they've changed the tax system here so that they have so much more coming in, and all they have to do is spend up to the hilt and leave a little bit behind while cutting services, and they end up with these billions of dollars in surplus every single year, and it's absolutely criminal as far as I'm concerned.
And they've sold off, like, what the people owned, our services, our telecommunications, is just an example, and they're trying to privatise the immigration department, and that's one of the reasons why we've had atrocities with Tampa and that Woomera detention centre, and how Australian citizens are being deported. It's all, one of the main causes is they've privatised a lot of these services, and they've privatised our social security to a degree, and you know, it's not actually saving us money. It's it'll cost us more money in the long run, unfortunately.
Oh, absolutely. And the average Australian's quality of life has suffered for it. You know, after the rains that we just had, I mean, you've seen the photos of that huge section of the Pacific Highway that just collapsed and just went away. You know,
yes.
Huge section of road, and it's because they haven't done anything about the upkeep. And what do they do when this thing falls apart? You end up with an argument of whose responsibility it was. It's like, oh, well, now since we built the big highway, that's now a local road. It's somebody else's responsibility.
We have the same problem in North Queensland with, we've got about 600 kilometres of highway, which every year goes underwater, and we're pretty much locked off from the rest of Australia, and the Commonwealth government loves to blame the state and local governments all the time. The John Howard government loves to blame our local governments, rather, and it's their responsibility.
I can't stand. There's constantly this federal and state finger pointing that goes on in this country, and you know, got to get past that and actually get down to business somehow on a lot of these issues. Hospitals, all these things that have really, really fallen apart. And you know, you mentioned a decline of conditions, and. There's this report that's just come out of the United States about these temporary worker visas here that we basically are bringing in, you know, foreign nationals to take Australian jobs under special visas that allow them to work for less money than an Australian citizen. And there was another one that was just coming out that they're utilizing a lot of these things and advertising jobs only in, say, Korean, saying that they're tax-free because they're paying under the table. And it wasn't until some Reed Korean actually reported these to the government, and both sides of politics will not talk about it.
Yes. Well, I can tell you a story about in the legal profession in America, how there are firms, what they do, they want to hire American lawyers. They'll advertise. There'll be a swarm of people in India who graduate from law, and what will happen is, overnight, they'll send faxes and emails to these Indians to do research, and they'll work for, say, a third of the price of what, you know, just the average lawyer in America will work for. And overnight, the research will be done by Indians in India, and it will be faxed back to the United States, and these lawyers will be charging top dollar. Meanwhile, there's probably a few hundred lawyers in that city that are unemployed. So no profession, no trade is safe from what is happening.
Yeah, you'd think that you know, the legal profession would be able to protect themselves, but in this modern era of no borders when it comes to economies is just, you know, it's a scary thing for all people involved. And it's funny you mention India. I don't know if you happen to catch the Chasers' War on Everything tonight.
I've been locked up, John, for the last 4 days with these exams. So.
Right. I would suggest going and checking the podcast at the ABC because one of the guys rang up his mobile phone provider about customer service, and he said he was having trouble with his email. And the guy says, well, I'll walk you through it. He says, no. He says, I need you to show me. Where are you located? And the guy says, well, in India. He says, okay, I'm coming. And sure enough, he flew to India and goes and stands outside the headquarters of telephone support for three mobile systems and ends up getting turned away by security. They won't let him in. But they actually flew all the way to India to show the three building where all this telephone support happens for one of the largest telecommunications providers in Australia, and they're not hiring Australians to run their telephone support.
Yes.
And it's insane, Laurie. It's absolutely insane. If you think you can maintain people's lives when you're so willing to sell off their jobs to overseas and give them no protection whatsoever, and this isn't just Australia, this is This is, you know, the United States does this. Everybody's doing this stuff. And they wonder why they can't, they can't sell their products in their own countries. Well, because they're not paying Australian workers any money to actually have an income, to have disposable income in which to buy stuff with. And I don't understand why it is so hard to get this through people's heads.
Well, Peter Costello does say he's running the economy, and he knows all about economics. And yeah, I don't think he's not very smart, is he?
Well, you know, the only thing that he's smart about is politics.
Yeah.
And you know, I really just don't appreciate that as being a talent anymore. I just, you know, I think it's for the weak-minded and the untalented. And as Michael Chugg, who is, you know, one of Australia's largest concert promoters, said to me once, it's one of my favorite lines I've ever been told. I did a little bit of a PR thing with him and Jerry Lewis when he was here. And there I am standing with Jerry Lewis and Michael Chugg, and Chuggy turns to me. I can't remember what we're talking about. He looks at me. He says, "Mate, money is how the untalented keep score." And I've never forgotten that line. And this is a guy that should know. He made his entire fortune off of other people's talents, but at least he is honest enough to admit it.
Yeah. Well, politics.
It's.
Yeah,
you kind of end up speechless after a while, because you know, I like I said, I've been watching Parliament a lot recently, and I mean, Howard's really turned up the rhetoric leading up to the election. He's making up ground, which is always, you know, I'm so happy we got rain, but you know what? People are going to take this that the drought has broken. And they're not going to worry about this thing anymore, and it's going to turn more people back towards Howard. And I just hope that we have enough time between now and the election for, you know, the debate to really get out there. Come on, Kevin Rudd, let's step up the game. You know, I think he's, you know, he's trying to play this as best he can without falling into traps. But you know, it's going to be a tough slog, you know, over the next. You know, 6 months or whatever it's going to be till the election.
Yeah.
It's just going to be
tough. Watch out for the October surprises.
Absolutely. Are we going to have another Tampa? Or, you know, what is he going to pull out of his hat? I mean, he's tried it with this environment thing, but I don't really think that's going to fly. Because there's just too much information and... folks like SBS and the ABC are doing so much documentary content right now on the environment that I think people are getting the education that they need on that particular issue. And I'm impressed with the fact that Australians have taken the environment on as a really crucial issue in this election in such a really strong way over just the last year. It's been rather impressive.
Well, I've had my own conspiracy theories behind Howard and his so-called green policy when he pulls it out of his sleeve.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I believe that I've got this conspiracy theory that Howard and Bush are trying to destroy the environment so much that we'll have no choice, that the government will have to pass strict laws, undemocratic laws, just to save the environment. It's a ploy. It's a power stealing ploy. It's just a conspiracy theory of mine, John.
I've been talking about this for the last couple of weeks, because with Bush's whole two-faced kind of thing with the G8, the way he told the, you know, behind closed doors, he's telling them one thing, saying, you know, you got to lighten up on the language of these proposals, and then publicly telling the G8 to get with the program, and just right at the same time, Howard gets his environmental reports that comes up with a carbon cap and trade system that has carbon price set at such a low level that it's not going to make any difference to the way that power companies invest in their future infrastructure. It's about half the price that it needs to be. And I think that this is a concerted effort by both of them. I agree with you. I don't think that this is a conspiracy theory at all. I think this is conspiracy reality. And yeah. You know, this really worries me, this one. The way that they're playing this, I think that they're playing it brilliantly for what they want, but it's absolutely just the shithouse for the environment and for the good of the Australian people. I think it's and actually for the rest of the planet, because you know we just have to get over this arrogance that, you know, we're not responsible kind of crap. And the whole boom of this economy is mostly based on all the coal that we're selling to China, and that's the whole thing.
Natural resources and the boom can't last forever. We're selling off our reserves and assets, and without that, things are going to get pretty bad. It's that way in Australia that the only decent blue-collar job one can get with decent pay happens to be in the mines. Outside of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're finding out in Western Australia, because of these new, you know, individual agreements, that safety in the mines is becoming a real issue, because, you know, workers that go and make noise about safety considerations end up having to go by themselves to the boss, as opposed to being able to go to the union and say, we have a safety concern, and have the backing of the organization to be able to go up and say, you got to sort this. They have had so many close calls with large machinery out there. Someone, if something isn't done out there, someone's going to die. And that is a scary proposition.
That's one of the reasons why I got out of the mines when I did, is my supervisor at the time wasn't really concerned about the safety of myself nor my crew. He was more worried about being the top producer at this plant. And I had a near-death situation one night, so I got out of there quick smart. And but, you know, what I came to, I didn't come to a higher-paid job and that, and I'm struggling with money. And with this, there was no unions where I was, and no one who I could go to. So I'm glad it's coming out now, John, about what's happening. I'm glad that.
Yeah, and a lot of credit has to go to these workers in Western Australia who have come out on camera and spoken out about what's going on. And if you actually look at the numbers between union mines and non-union mines, all that stuff about how the unions are inefficient is proved wrong.
Yeah.
The union mines are as productive, if not more productive, than the non-union mines.
Well, safety,
and
safety used to be controlled by the unions. That's how safety came into the mines in the first place. And for years, if there was a problem with safety, it'll be always the union kicking up. You know, we don't want people dying underground. We don't want collapses. This is what the union is saying.
Absolutely.
We will not go underground unless you can say it is safe. And this prompted the government to pass laws to, like, with pressure from unions, to do something about it. And now the unions are deteriorating. Companies, they're always going to put profits over people. I mean, a bunch of blokes in a boardroom in Switzerland who want to please shareholders do not care about 7 or 8 deaths in Australia or a few hundred deaths in South America. They don't care. You know,
you got it, man.
Yeah.
And with that, I got to wrap you up. We've blown straight through two breaks, but that's fine. I don't care. That was the, I love when you ring in, and. You know, and I'm sorry to hear with what's happened, you know, that you're really seeing the effects of what's happened to the student unions. But I got to wrap things up, mate. So
yes. You
take care of yourself. Kick ass on those exams, mate, because you are going to go out there and be representing the worker. I know you are. And I'm going to sit back and watch you have a really, really great career once you get to kick it off. So, Lori, thanks so much for ringing in today, man. You take care of yourself.
Thank you, John. I'll talk to you later.
All right, man. And that was our good friend Fire Ant. And it's no different anywhere. And as Bob says, I'm supposed to tell Lori, and I'm hoping he's back on the stream, that in the U.S. they only call it a disaster if more than five people die. How disgusting is that? And before I get out of here, if you haven't heard about it, two more subpoenas have been issued in the attorney case. This has just happened this morning. They've issued subpoenas on Harriet Myers and Taylor, and so this is going to be good. Are they going to try and make Harriet Myers a fall woman again? I mean, how much buffer are they going to, you know, put between all the criminality of this administration and the people who are really, really involved? It's just absolutely amazing. But good on the committees, and let's see more of these subpoenas fly, baby. Let's just make it a firework display of subpoenas going out. Let's take all these bastards out. So, you know, news, and I reckon let's watch Harriet Myers, you know, squirm in the chair. It could be great fun because she's an absolute hack, as we know. So anyway, folks, got to wrap it up. Thank you to Bob Kincaid for producing today. Thank you for coming on Friday. Thanks to the Carpenters for everything that they do for us. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Louder for the music. Thank you to our mods and to our bloggers for everything that they do to us. And don't forget, Joe Vecchio and I are swapping slots come next Monday. And next Monday is the debut of Strictly Confidential, conversation radio with a homosexual agenda. This is going to be awesome. It's going to have the largest straight audience a gay program has ever had. I guarantee it. Peter was born for this business. But anyway, folks, thanks for being with me again today. We'll have heaps more tomorrow, and as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green, and we will see you tomorrow.
If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes, eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an I can be, as yours are. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment. Tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotions than laughter, anger, and let's f- if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics. We're down on our luck, but I can express more emotion.
You're listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. One of the holiest Shiite shrines was bombed earlier today, and military officials say it was an inside job. Two minarets were toppled by blasts in a repeat of last year's bombing, which sparked intra-Muslim bloodshed between Shias and Sunnis. 15 Iraqi security members have been arrested in connection with the attack. In an attempt to quell potential violence, Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki imposed an indefinite curfew on vehicle traffic and large gatherings. U.S. officials have called for Iraqis to reject this call of violence, and both Shia and Sunni clerics told their followers to remain calm. Violence continued today in Gaza as gunmen fired at a peace demonstration this morning, killing at least one person. Another 8 Palestinian militants were also killed, bringing the total to 55 in the past 4 days. Regional analysts fear the territories are on the brink of an all-out civil war. The UN announced it will immediately trim its humanitarian aid assistance in Gaza following the death of 2 of its workers and the wounding of 2 others today. Only food and medical aid will be supplied by the international body. Nobel Peace Prize winner and Israeli elder statesman Shimon Peres has been elected as Israel's 9th president. A member of the Kadima Party, Peres will be sworn in July 15th, and former Prime Minister Ehud Barak was elected leader of Israel's Labor Party. Barak, who has been critical of current Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and his handling of the war against Hezbollah in Lebanon, will now have more influence over Olmert's future with his new position. In Jakarta, Indonesian police say they have arrested a terrorist leader from one of Southeast Asia's most notorious Islamic militant groups. Abu Duhana is thought to be responsible for some of the region's bloodiest bombings. For only the second time in his presidency, President Bush appeared at the Senate's weekly closed-door luncheon yesterday. The visit was an attempt to convince skeptical conservative Republicans to support the controversial immigration bill. No senator reported a change of opinion. There's a new commander of U.S. Special Operations, Navy